This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody.
What's happening? Are you ready? You ready for another day in your story? Is today going to be a whole chapter, or it'll just be a footnote? Ooh. Kind of hard to decide that stuff.
It's like a sticky note with no sticky at the moment, though.
Oh, really? Sure, Ben. You're a real source of happiness and joy this morning,
okay,
aren't
Garrett,
you?
Let's be like radio then.
No. But there's a happy ground where you need to realize you're depressed and need medication.
Sticky notes with no sticky.
I was listening.
You got overnight to prescribe things.
No, but I was listening to something fascinating on the way in this morning. That's why I say this. We all think we have free will and that we've decided to be a certain way. And I'm reading this amazing book by Yuval Noah Harari, and then I'm listening to the audiobook when I can't read it because I want to do both and be time efficient. Jesus, what a great book. So he, in the last chapter of his book, talks about how we can essentially, we're getting close to a point now where we can make people feel a certain way and we can make them choose something by introducing electrical stimuli to their brains.
Ooh.
So you put on something called a transneural direct current stimulator. It's like a helmet.
Thank you.
Put on a helmet and it creates magnetic fields and electrical current in certain parts of the brain that it needs to stimulate. So what they've done, they've treated depressed patients. They will, and in very many cases, they don't put on a helmet. They actually have electrodes in their brain that are connected to a computer, which is in their chest. And this thing just fires off these. It temporarily paralyzes certain parts of the brain.
Ooh.
Right? So depressed people, and they've done many clinical trials of this already. What happens is these depressed people immediately report they don't feel depressed anymore. The one guy started relapsing and they realized the batteries had gone in the computer. So they just put in new batteries and he felt fine again.
And this is a consistent feeling. It's not like high.
No, it's a real thing. It's they've completely short-circuited the depression. They've got rid of those feelings. That person does not feel depressed at all anymore and cannot tell that they ever were. Isn't that phenomenal?
It's weird.
It's scary, right?
Yeah.
Because we all think, oh, well, I have to work through this with therapy, or if I take some medication, it'll help me up the serotonin and dopamine levels in the brain and blah, 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 all the stuff we've learned.
Sure, but what are the sort of lasting follow-on effects then?
Well, this is what's so interesting. There are no negative effects, no measurable ones. There's a woman who, a journalist, who was sent to this Air Force base in Ohio where they train U.S. soldiers to be better soldiers. Mm-hmm. They call it the Human Effectiveness Unit. This will appeal to you, Ben. 100 days to better, right?
Mm-hmm.
This woman was allowed as a journalist to participate in the program. What happens is you put on the helmet. It's almost like a virtual reality game. These terrorists get up and run towards you. They're strapped with dynamite and they've got guns. And you have to shoot them. You've got a rifle, a computerized rifle in your hands, and you have to shoot and kill the terrorists, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a normal shoot and kill game. So the first time she puts it on, they don't do anything to her. They don't switch on their machinery that does this transneural direct current stimulation. So she shoots one or two, and then she gets nervous and frustrated because she's afraid because she sees these guys coming towards her. And then she gets one, and three others jump up in that one's place, and the game just becomes so hard, and she feels she's losing control. The rifle jams, whole lot of stuff. Very frustrating experience. She doesn't want to do it again. So they sit her down, they give her like a cup of tea, send her back in, switch it on and say to her, now, what we're going to do is we're going to use some of the technology that we've got, and we've done some research around which areas of the brain need to be quieted down so that you can focus on the task at hand, and we can make you interested in the task at hand.
Oh, my goodness.
She says, cool. I switch it on. She shoots, takes a deep breath, shoots, aims, shoots, takes a deep breath, shoots, aims, and so on, and picks off a whole bunch of terrorists. And she's really getting into it. And then suddenly she just hears, that's enough. And the lights come on. And she says, how many did I get? Straight away. And the woman doing the testing goes, all of them.
Oh.
And she says, and how long was I in there? She says, 20 minutes.
Wow.
And she said it was like a spiritual experience. After that, all she wanted to do was get back in the machine and keep shooting the terrorists. Huh?
Jeepers.
So.
See, that's why it's a lot to take in. You know, it's these are the beginnings of
man.
What? Who knows?
Well, imagine, because we all regard ourselves as being sanctified individuals. You know, Nolo is a person, gets to decide what happens in Nolo's life. Ben gets to decide what happens in his, etc. The reality is that what they're finding more and more is that we're a complicated bunch of signals from certain clusters and groups of nerve cells in our brains, in different parts of our brains at different times, that are responding to stimuli or to random occurrences. So in other words, there's either a direct chemical trigger for something, or there's an environmental signal that gets sent in that makes the brain respond a certain way, and then you convince yourself after that, that's your choice. You don't really make the decision. So there's no scary. Real. So that means there is no Nolo, there is no Ben, there is no Sia, there is no Gareth. This is frightening. Do you know how hard this is for me to deal with? I'm really struggling to understand this at this point.
What's it been like Game of Thrones, that guy who became Reek?
Yeah.
Just like program someone to be someone else, there essentially. We go. Through different stimulus and fear and all that kind of crap.
Right.
Well, because that's where my thinking's going. It's all good and well that in great cases, like people who are suffering from depression, they don't have to feel that way anymore. But will we get to a point where people can now start to really take over someone's brain and their thinking?
Yeah, you could.
Can you manipulate me to believe something?
Well, look at the done already with so many people in this country.
Well,
and that was on limited resources and smarts.
These
they
not
don't have the helmet
of
or anything.
There's no helmet. There's just open eyes and ears.
Oh. So, yeah, this wouldn't be the beginning of brainwashing. It would be the end of brainwashing.
How so? Addictive.
The stories, we're now building up to the final chapter in brainwashing as well. The first kinds of brainwashing were Reek style, lock someone up and beat them into submission.
Oh, jeez, okay. Well,
now there's just the small.
Then there was religion.
10 minutes, yeah.
Oh.
Then there was politics. Then there was psychology. These are all kinds of brainwashing, or at least brain manipulation tools. So this is just the final chapter.
When
now,
you can
now technology does it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But this
someone's
is,
brain.
All right. So you're immediately seeing the worst case scenario,
oh, no.
Right? Because this is what people do. No. We can't help it. We're always going to the, well, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, because now we are living till 200.
Well, the best that could happen is that you could choose on your in your software package. You go to the doctor. Maybe a specialist techno-neurologist or something.
Mm-hmm.
You'd say to them, look, I really want to learn how to play the piano. Problem is, I get so bored so quickly sitting in front of that piano, and I just can't get it right. He says, no problem. Here's the piano software package. You'll be playing like Chopin or Rachmaninoff in moments. Here it is. Upload this, and all you want, once you press go, is to sit in front of that piano and become the best. And within maybe a couple hours, maybe a couple of days. Who knows how long it'll take to train you, but you'll get it. And then you will be as good as Rachmaninoff or Chopin. It can be done. And this is just around the corner. It's not there yet, but we certainly know that there are ways to make this happen. Imagine making someone so completely focused on a language that they learn it overnight.
Yeah,
they're so hungry to learn it.
It always comes back to what we saw in The Matrix how many years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And how strange that movie was, and obviously Keanu Reeves was pretty average in it, but still, it all came back to this whole programming, treating us more like computers than these simple beings.
And then, of course, there's the low end of humanity, where I get an email every day. This one's from Martel, which certainly, I have been actively on the lookout for that man who is of my type. Text me here, 407719854, if you're that dude, and we can hook up and maybe more.
Oh.
Jeepers.
There are a lot of emojis in that as well. So
nice.
What are the chances Martel's a real person? Huh? I think I'm going to delete that one. It's with safe, without any worries. Amazing stuff, huh?
Look at how great we are. We're yeah. very balanced.
We go from
the
very
race.
Brilliant trans-neural direct current stimulator to the 419 scam. In one, we go from countries that are busy training elite military units where they can figure out how to turn them into expert snipers to Zimbabwe, which runs an election like scrambled eggs. Huh? What a world. We really are about to separate into two kinds of human. We really are.
Do you think so?
Absolutely. And the ones who are not on the techno train, those ones are going to become organic food or just a consumer market. They're not going to matter. They're just not going to matter. There's no equality in the future. In fact, the opposite is going to happen. It's going to become less equal than ever. And if you're not on this technology train, you're finished. You may as well be a rhino.
Oh.
No, really, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, rhinos are finished.
And it doesn't matter where in the world you are or what kind of a government you have or what sort of an economic system you have. If you're not on this technology train, you're finished.
Well, it's the one constant. Like, governments are becoming more desperate. Technology is becoming more kind of involved in our lives.
It is. So don't be afraid. So this is exciting. And we're living at the time where all of this is going to start happening. And it's going to happen faster than you think.
I watched this really interesting video yesterday about Africa becoming China's China. Like, it's just so interesting how you think how people evolve.
What was that on?
There's a variety of channels on YouTube that I watch. Really interesting 10-minute documentaries about how the world works.
Okay.
And it's just so interesting to see how China, obviously going from a place where you used to have very low-income, low-functioning people, obviously in a huge mass, they then industrialized, and now all of a sudden they've got medium income and medium skill bases, so you can't make things like you used to. So China has basically gone out to seek its China in order to be able to help with growth. So they're going into and pumping into money into Africa. And they're going to these markets where you've got low-income, low-functioning people, and then they're doing exactly what the world did to them, but they're doing it to Africa.
Oh, yeah, because they learnt.
But it's just interesting how you say it. Like,
it's like the ANC learnt from the National Party. They learnt how this is how you control people.
Exactly.
This is what you do.
But then you see, like, from your points, which obviously are on the high end of the spectrum here, and to see how the world is working, how people are always finding these gaps. And it's, again, it's these separate kind of human kind of races almost.
Mm.
There's A team and B team.
Yeah, it's sort of
thought of it that
yang,
way.
Yin and yang.
But it's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can get into the A team if you're in the B team, and you can get into the B team if you're in the A team. So there is osmosis. There is a possibility for you to switch across. The difficulty is, like, do you want to? And there are a lot of people who are stuck in, like, very basic worlds where they can't switch over. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are born into a basic world but are desperate to get out, you know? People like Siak Rosa, who's in I think he's in Harvard at the moment studying, you know.
Oh, from Tata.
Yeah. I think he's busy building rockets or I don't know what he's doing. He might be working for NASA already. I'm not sure what the story is. But there are people. Now, he was born in a very, very quiet, very unimpressive, quite sort of basic human settlement in the Eastern Cape. And this dude is now building rockets for the rest of us to reach the stars. That's amazing.
Exactly.
It can be done, but it's an individual decision. And I know I just said a couple of minutes ago that in the book that I'm reading at the moment, there are no individuals. But until we can figure out what exactly, because, you know, people often ask you, who are you? Mm. You know, describe yourself in a couple of words. Turns out, we don't know where that you lives. We don't know exactly. We can't pinpoint what your authentic voice is. It turns out you are whatever chemicals and electrical stimulation your brain is subject to at any given time. Jeez. And you might not have any provable mental, emotional, psychological connection to the seer of 10 years ago. None. You might be nothing like that seer. And you may have a couple of hazy memories of what you thought and who you thought you were at that time. But it's almost like a book you read once. or a movie you watched once. No, really. Now, how's that for interesting? Isn't that just fascinating? God damn it, I love being able to pick up books and read these things. I mean, what a world we live in now. And this stuff's actually happening. It's not as if it's pie in the sky.
Oh, my goodness. It would be so interesting good. Then to start to imagine how we'll coexist with one another. If we use this A team and B team analogy, there are these fast movers in the world who are making things happen, who are making great advancements, and then we have, as you were saying, just the consumers in the world. How the two will treat each other and coexist.
Oh, with great discrimination and exploitation, obviously, like every other time in history.
Yay!
Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe we could be better than that.
Because if we are going to that point where you can configure how someone thinks, maybe we can just wire you up to not even be aware of what is happening to
certainly
you.
Certainly it can quiet down that prejudice in you.
Uh-huh.
Now, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if you could put on this helmet before you vote, for example, and decide, actually, I'm going to vote for the person who's going to deliver the best things for me. Not according to their promises, but according to their track record. Walk into the voting booth and you would know what to do. Imagine if you put this on before you went shopping and you only bought the things you actually needed and that were good for you, not the bullshit that you've marketed about.
Right? Imagine you have like a 2-hour pill of just clinical thought. So you're going to an exam or you're going, like you said,
and you would think like a brilliant robot instead of like a dumb human. Because there's a lot about us that's just dumb, man. We respond to like you're angry, you're happy, you're depressed, you're worried about your health, you're worried about money, you're horny. You make all these stupid decisions because you're an animal. And if you could take this pill, it would clear your mind. If everybody had the ability to vote, let's say you could vote when you were at your most optimal, your phone would suddenly go, we've been tracking your neurological processes for the last 6 weeks, Ben, and right now is the best and most optimal time for you to cast your vote. We know the election's only next year, but if you cast your vote now, we'll save it. You're, of course, entitled to change your mind along the way, but we'll save your vote now so that you can always refer back to this and go, ah, I was optimal at that time. That's probably the best decision I could have made. I wasn't distracted by money or women or fast cars or sport or anything else. Here it is. I'm going to go, okay, I'm voting Hillary Clinton because that's what my brain says I'm at the most perfect time to decide about. And just, you go in and you do it.
Well, just think of court cases.
And then you could log your vote then, and if you really wanted to change it, I suppose you could.
You get into a court case and you've got to take the stand. If you've got one of these truth pills or these clinical pills or whatever. Did you, Henry, attack your family with an axe? Well, of course I did.
Of course, any idiot could tell. Imagine, you wouldn't have to waste time. Humans lie all the time, right? I mean, if we could figure out.
They've got lawyers to help them lie in a certain way.
We could quiet their brain from trying to lie to themselves. Figure out the real truth. I think this is exciting.
Dates and marriage would change.
People wouldn't cheat. They would, because they wouldn't get away with it. Michelle says, there's a woman I follow on social media that's using that helmet treatment for her anxiety. She goes a couple of times a month for treatment at the clinic. Sounds fantastic. And Mfundo is listening to us this morning, as he does every morning. Mfundo, we love you. He's our super fan, right? Duncan says, Gareth, do you think South Africa is likely to go down the same typical road? I suppose you mean like our friends just north of us in Zimbabwe who can't organize an election. An opposition party claims victory in election over the ANC. There's violence, denial, etc. Cheers, love the show. Duncan, working in Latvia. We still need to know why you work in Latvia, Duncan, and what you do. That's far more interesting than the question you asked. So call us or message me with what you're doing in Latvia. I forget. I don't know what the answer is to that question because there are so many new dynamics in play. If this was the 1970s or the 1980s, I'd say sure. You know, it looks to me as if the government here are making decisions that are taking us in a very bad direction. And just yesterday we spoke about expropriation without compensation, the fact that the ANC are convinced this is a good policy to follow. Their economic illiteracy is going to propel them towards a world where they're going to set us back by, I don't know, 100 years.
Yep.
Anyway, I mean, that's what you would look at from the available evidence. But the fact is, there are too many things now. We belong to a community of nations. We belong to a world where it would be very, very difficult for us to slip back that much. And I'm not being an optimist or an idealist here. There are too many ways we're connected to the rest of the universe. There are too many ways that you can hop onto email or Facebook or Twitter or anything else, and you can connect to the real world, not the stupid political world. And it's very difficult for politicians to be able to control that like they once did. You could shut off a country like North Korea, and you could tell everybody what was happening, and they would believe you. That's not the way it works anymore. And we are entering a phase of humanity where the state is becoming less and less powerful. Their influence on people and their ability to change people's lives is becoming diminished, not growing. So I can't say that it's obvious to me, Duncan. I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I really don't. We're going to speak to KF, speaking of Zimbabwe and what's going on there. KF Malindi, we spoke to just one day after the election, and now we don't know who's won. You know, it's 3 days later. We're not sure whether the MDC won or whether ZANU-PF won. We heard celebrations on the streets from some very credible news organizations saying, oh no, it looks like the MDC won. Now it seems like nobody really knows. So we will have to figure this out, and he's the best guy to help us figure it out. So we get into that in a moment. It's time for the five things you need to know today. So let's start off with the total shutdown yesterday. Does anyone know what this was?
It was women's rights, right?
Yeah, Nolo, did you take part in the total shutdown?
Of course not, Gareth. I was here.
Oh, what was it? Was it a place? It's,
of course
it
not.
It was happening in pretty much every province in South Africa yesterday.
So what was the idea? I mean, thousands of women, according to this story from EWN, marched to the union buildings on Wednesday, demanding the government take drastic steps to address the scourge of gender-based violence in the country. There's so much wrong with that sentence. So, I mean, the idea is good, right? I mean, we've got to stop violence against women. I don't think there's anyone who thinks that that's a bad idea, stopping violence against women. But the idea that government can do it, when most violence happens inside of families, when most violence happens inside of relationships, if you are in a position to either love and respect the woman in your life or to beat her, and you choose to beat her, that's not the government's fault, and the government can't get involved. There's no place for the government to get involved. What do? Go knock on doors of houses at random and go, excuse me, Mr. and Mrs. Chabalala, we are here to just check that you're not beating each other. I mean, what's government going to do when he wakes up in the morning and she says something to him and he's enraged and smacks her instead of giving her a hug? What's government going to do about that? It's insane that we should be making this a government problem. This is a male problem, first of all. So it doesn't help that women are getting together and complaining about it. Men have to figure themselves out. And men have to stop being assholes, and there are a lot of asshole men. Mm-hmm. But also, we need to figure out what kind of relationship dynamics we're going to accept and which ones we're not. Mm. I mean, this is just frightening to me that we need to have protests where we expect government to come in like a grandfather and separate the children. Angry women protesters under the banner of total shutdown in Pretoria have expressed disappointment after President Cyril Ramaphosa did not receive their memorandum of demands. Well, what's he going to do? What do you want Cyril to do? Cyril, as far as I can tell, doesn't go home and beat Dr. Tsepo Motsepe. So Cyril's doing exactly what a good man should do. And that's all you can do is if you're a man, treat the women in your own life with respect. And if there is a man who is not, take him to task. But it's an individual thing. Can't get government involved. I can't help thinking that a lot of this is just people banding together and feeling part of something, like a march or a movement or a hashtag. It's just people getting together to feel part of a club for a day. And then they go about their business the next day and men carry on beating women. And
yeah, but it's like everything in this country. People just want to find a way of saying, how do we stop something? We all feel powerless to the things that are marginalizing us or holding us back. So what is the thing that people can do to feel?
Start with you. I mean, this. I'm not going to, by no means am I in a position to tell a woman who's undergoing this kind of abuse what to do. I have no idea. Because it depends on your own unique circumstances. It depends on the kind of man you're dealing with, whether you're in absolute danger every day. I mean, there are things that I don't know that I would be in a very, very stupid place if I started telling you what to do. But I can tell you categorically, there's no way government can help you.
But the government are not completely without blame here. All of society's ills, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be just general cash and transit heist, whatever it is, it comes down to where the country's at. If people are feeling like they've got no dignity, there's no pride in what they do, they've got economic problems and economic stress, you know how difficult it is to be poor in this country. Every day is a shit day. So what happens? You feel like your masculinity is being threatened every single day because you're not bringing home the money.
So what weak men do in those situations?
What do weak men do? They take it out on the person next to them. Correct. So society's ills are often reflected in what government are doing. What are government doing? They do nothing for creating employment or employable people. It all trickles down. So government are never completely not responsible for this kind of stuff.
You make a good point.
You can't pin it on them, sure.
But they're not going to, like, what do you want them to do then? Tell them what you need, because they're not going to figure it out. They're definitely not smart enough to figure it out in government.
You're definitely right with that.
So then what they need to have is not a memorandum, like, are you against violence against women? Of course. Who's going to say, well, not really?
Yeah, I'll think about it.
Yeah. What you need is someone saying, hey, how about some jobs? How about some economic growth? How about abandoning this stupid idea of, you know, turning our back on property laws, for example? How about international trade? How about dropping taxes? How about this fuel levy problem, which we know is a government problem?
Do you think fuel levies will...
How about getting the SOEs in line so that we don't have downgrades and poor people don't suffer even more? But, you know, to ask for those things suddenly isn't so sexy.
No, it's not. But do you think there'll be more or less domestic violence with the next petrol price increase?
More.
Yeah.
Gareth, you're right in saying this is an individual thing, really. There's been, I don't know how many campaigns, awareness campaigns run over the years.
Year after year, we have that 16 days of activism.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and man, it's a very complex issue, really, because one has to think about the woman who is in an abusive relationship and what they think the outcome or the end result will be of that. And obviously the men, we can't really say much about them because I don't really know what state of mind they're in. Yeah. They could be disturbed for all we know and they need some serious help.
They almost certainly are.
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely. And yeah, Flip, I think what I'd do from my side, if I really wanted to make a difference in this case, would, I don't know, I'd probably start a dojo because I am licensed to do that.
Now we're talking.
I'd start a dojo and train
black
women.
Black horse.
Maybe call her a black horse.
Sia was trying to name the dojo.
No, yeah, I was calling it.
There we go, black horse black dojo. Horse Do it. Yeah, because then the next time that guy tries to hit the woman, he suddenly gets reminded how weak he really is when she punches him in the face.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you.
And then he goes back with a knife. Step in the right direction, I think. But as for, I don't know. It's a mess, really.
Okay. Well, I don't know. We're not the brains trust that's going to solve this problem. I can promise you that. But it's a good idea. I mean, start with that. Other news. Cyril Ramaphosa has personally addressed the total shutdown protesters. And promised a gender summit. Oh, good. More talks. Yay. That's great. That's good work, great. Cyril. Well, I don't want to talk about that.
And then let's have another Women's Month where someone gets to win a pink 4x4.
Yeah. It is Women's Month now. You're going to see lots of big corporations advertising around it, trying to get, what do they call it? Virtue points. Just ignore them all. Ignore them all. It's a total waste of time. The EFF has welcomed Cyril Ramaphosa's announcement, blah, blah, blah. And blah, blah, blah. We don't need to give them any more attention. And most passengers in a non-fatal Mexican plane crash were U.S. citizens. The Mexico City-bound passenger jet that smashed into scrubland near the runway shortly after the plane took off from an airport in northern Durango on Tuesday. Turns out most of the passengers, 65 of the citizens on board, were U.S. citizens.
Hmm.
Yeah. So obviously there's going to be, Donald Trump's going to say, if there was a wall, they wouldn't have crashed, which of course is going to mean absolutely nothing. You know how people are. All right, let's go to Graham on line one. You want to hear from Graham?
Sure.
You feel like hearing from Graham this morning? Let's talk to him. Hey, Graham, what's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, all good. What's up, man?
No, just listening to this conversation, and I think you guys are almost missing a beat.
Yeah.
We talk about it trickling down from government. I think it's the other way around. I think politics is downstream from culture, and the politics that we see in this country is a result of the damaged cultures that we see across the country. So the issue with women being beaten and going to the government is sort of absurd, because the problem stems from the home, with single mothers who are working all day and no father influence to be a positive masculine influence on these young men. And the cycle continues and perpetuates itself, if you ask me.
Yep.
And actually, they've done studies that show that the number one cause of men going astray is a lack of a father figure at home.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm not even going to argue with you, because I think you've hit a very, very sensitive nerve.
It's sensitive, but like, how much more can we tiptoe around these things? I mean, like, I think also that, you know, talk about information age, and I think we're seeing that in the likes of the YouTube channels and some of the right-wing speakers on the YouTube channels that are labeled far right-wing.
Yeah.
But, you know, the bullshit can't fly anymore, and working on feelings doesn't work anymore. We need to look at the facts, even if they're uncomfortable.
All right, Graham. Yes, thanks, man. All right, there's Graham. Here are a couple of messages quickly before we get to our last headline. We've got to get to sport and everything else. Guys, I picked up the Zanushka, 8 kilograms this winter. I was told Tuk can help me lose weight. Is it advisable?
Well, Anushka, it depends if you want to keep the weight off or go to prison. Because, hey, what, prison also takes the weight off. So then you're taking too much weight off.
Oh, boy. Anushka.
Wow.
I love our listeners. They're so smart. All right, Duncan's explained what he's doing in Latvia. You want to hear?
Okay.
I work as a consultant in cloud computing on a project in Latvia. That's boring. What do you think of that? Latvia is a pretty interesting country to work in. I've learned a lot about the people, culture, history, etc. Yesterday, I learned something weird. Latvians keep live carp in tanks in supermarkets. Not as pets, but rather as the next meal on the table. Carp is a bit like turkey in Eastern Europe. Big fish instead of big bird for Christmas. Some people keep the fish alive in their bath to ensure super freshness before cooking. How's that? Jesus. I mean, that's like basic, huh?
See, Duncan, that's what we're looking for. That
and then he sent a picture of these carp in a tank. I mean, carp are not very nice tasting fish as far as I can tell. Isn't that barbel?
I think they're the same gang.
That's like rubbery. Oh, my God. I feel sorry for Latvia like I do for Zimbabwe. All right, Monique says, Gareth, you are being a little simplistic. The judicial system, for example, needs to work. Rapists are set free for dodgy processes, raping again and again. Lack of police response, the list is endless. No, you're absolutely right, Monique. That is somewhere where government can do something. But in order to have that happen, we actually need a functional bureaucracy. That's why government stops working at the talk part of this. When it comes to implementation, they fail completely. Not one government department is working effectively by the standards that it should have or that it did under, say, Thabo Mbeki's administration. Jacob Zuma has stripped out competence from this government. That's the problem, Monique. So you're addressing an incompetent government, hoping it will become miraculously competent. I mean, who's the police commissioner at the moment? For a long time, we were paying Ria Piecha to sit at home. You've forgotten about that. Now, if someone's sitting at home, we had a female commissioner of police. This should have been someone who was at the forefront of gender-based violence fights, right? Someone who could have done something. She could have actually done something. She's suspended, sitting at home. Who was replacing her? Nobody. For the longest time, we had no one to replace her. Then suddenly they found a couple of people, appointed one or two here and there. People started getting excited. They were like, the police are going to start working again. Well, they don't. When you see a policeman, if you're a woman who's gone through domestic or any other kind of violence, you see a policeman, you don't feel safer. You sometimes feel less safe. So I hear you. I totally understand. But you're addressing someone who doesn't have the ability to help you and hoping that they'll miraculously come too. We have an competent state. You just have to look at the SOEs. And those are part business. So we can judge them as businesses, or we can judge them as government departments, and they fail in both. We don't have, you know, consistent electricity supply on the one side, and we don't make money from it on the other. It is an abject failure. And governments supposedly put their best people in there. People like Brian Molefe, who was about to become our finance minister at one point. So ask yourself very simply, and if I'm being simplistic, then, you know, you've probably pointed out some flaw in my thinking, so maybe there's one in yours. Here's a rough guess at what that might be. You can't ask someone who's not competent to suddenly become competent and solve your problems. They're not going to help you. You don't go to a plumber when you have a heart problem.
That's one way to look at it.
All right, enough of that. Let's move on because we've got other things to talk about this morning. I see Bitcoin is slowly ticking up a little bit from yesterday. $7,623 and Ethereum at $420. Well, it was teetering very close to dropping below $400 Ethereum yesterday. So happily that's climbed up just a little bit, but certainly nothing to get excited about. Let's turn our attentions to Ben. What's in the sport headlines, Ben?
Serena Williams takes the biggest clap of her career. Caster Semenya and other African athletes are just stranded in Nigeria. And Dale Steyn says Sean Pollock's record is becoming a bit of a burden. Yeah, Joanna Konta. She beat Serena Williams 6-1, 6-love at the Silicon Valley Classic.
All right, so is this a new installation on the tennis calendar that we need to pay attention to?
One of the events that no one really gives a toss about until something like this happens. Well, look, I mean, the WTA, just like the ATP, they've got sort of global year-long league thing undertaking. So there's events all the time. Just like the PGA Tour, you know, these things happen. But yeah, 6-1, 6-love. In Serena's 23-year career, she has never, ever been given such a drubbing. And, well, it ties back to what I was saying prior to Wimbledon. There's going to be moments where Serena's really going to consider, is it worth carrying on? And were you getting beaten 6-1, 6-love? Or were you getting beaten 6-1, 6-love by a British woman? I mean, this is just... I mean, it hurts for me to cover this story. Imagine what she's going through at the back end of this.
Yeah.
But Konta, she... very humble, very sort of pragmatic around what happened. She said, it is still so humbling to be on court with Serena Williams. To which that probably made Serena feel even worse. Sean Pollock, he was incredible for South Africa. He really was. And he had the biggest wicket haul for Test cricket, 421 dismissals. Dale Steyn, who for many, many years was going to be the guy to easily eclipse that. If you look at his trajectory in the sport and his strike rate and how just prolific he was in the one in the five-day Test arena. He then hit the skids, got a lot of injuries, and then, well, we all know where he is right now. He's kind of, I don't know, it's... Do you say he's at a crossroads in his career, or do you say he's just kind of plateaued? It's difficult to say, but anyway, he got to 421 Test wickets recently in the Test match in Gaul, but in a two-Test series, he took all of 2 wickets. And he says, people are just fixating over this record so much, it's really becoming a burden to me. All he wants to do is take more wickets. One wicket doesn't matter at all. He believes he's got 500-plus in him, and he just wants to be able to perform and get opportunity to give back to his country. And the thing is, some of these players, the good ones that is, they shouldn't give much of a toss about statistics.
Mm-hmm.
People like me, who sometimes run out of things to say, therefore I take most of my sports on the, you know, off the cusp. You need things like this, stats tell stories. So you can't say Dale Steyn is feeling good. You need to say Dale Steyn needs one more wicket to do this. Which is the better story? It's the stats, right? Because you want to have these reference points. So Dale's had enough. So if you see him, don't talk to him about 421 wickets. Rather talk to him about tattoos or Labradors or surfing. He'll appreciate that a whole lot more. Caster Semenya and the rest of Africa's top talents in athletics, well, they've been stranded in Lagos. Because, well, let's be honest, shithole logistics mean that you can't get connecting flights when you need to. So what an absolute ball ache. The African, basically, championships for athletics.
Mm-hmm.
They've had to postpone certain events because... people are lying on the floor in Lagos at the airport, sleeping on their luggage because they can't get connecting flights. Flights have been cancelled.
Aye, aye, aye.
Absolute disaster. members of the Kenyan team said, look, we don't want to be horrible, but Nigeria, this is a shit place. It's just, it's terrible. We're not being rude. It's just that Nigeria is a poor, poor country. Actual words from Nicholas Bett, Kenya's 400-meter hurdles world champion.
Hmm.
So they were threatening to go home. Eventually, they got into a flight. Oh, it's just so sickening to keep hearing these stories of gross incompetence. It just really is. It's embarrassing. England, they were snubbed in a big way by FIFA. Well, as you know, the history, like when FIFA started, England were like, we don't be part of this peasant organization. We're the FA. We're the Football Association. We don't need World Cups. We're the FA. We've got English men in shorts and beards and stuff. So FIFA always done their own thing. They never really needed the FA or England in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came to getting that the World Cup bid, they were like, no, we're taking Russian money instead, so screw you guys and your bid and your David Beckham and your Prince William. So they're now thinking, well, we have to have this thing again because our players aren't going to bring it home. It's coming home, hashtag, needs to actually happen with us hosting the thing. So 2030 could be the thing. They've done a feasibility study, but let's be honest, all this bollocks about feasibility studies and who should do this and let's assign a committee. England have the English Premier League. I mean, that's got stadiums, that's got people, that's got everything you need for a dream World Cup. They should be able, and I'm not saying this should be this arrogant, but they should literally be able to go put cock on table and say, right, we want this. Stop fucking around now. Give us the World Cup. We deserve it. We've got everything it needs to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
Just give us the bloody World Cup, you bunch of dicks. Of course, you can't say it because FIFA, they've got all these processes and, you know, protocols and blah, 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 democracy, which is all a big sham, of course. But the interesting thing here is that FIFA, being the dickheads that they are, sorry, this is dreadful language, but we are talking about FIFA. By taking the World Cup from 32 to 48 teams, these guys have given themselves an absolute bullet in the big toe because now they're sort of outsizing themselves from other countries. So Uncle Sepp, he said World Cup should never be in more than one country. It's a very good point that Sepp made because World Cups are about culture as well. Okay, so you go to, say, let's use the last example, Russia. You go to Russia, it was a good World Cup. People enjoyed Russia, blah, blah, blah. Forget about all the politics, all that kind of stuff. It was cool because it was Russian. Russian people had the world. The world went to Russia, okay? So that's fun. Now it's like, okay, well, the next one's going to be Canada, America, Mexico. And then because it's 48 teams, what chance has a country like Latvia got for hosting the World Cup and expressing their love?
Zero. Poor Duncan from Latvia is never going to see a World Cup there.
Exactly. So what did Latvia got to do? They've got to tie in a whole bunch of other countries, some of them being shitholes, some of them being countries they don't even like. But because it's 48 teams, because FIFA are just useless, they now have to have these strange joint bids. Hmm. So England can have the World Cup tomorrow, in my opinion, and anybody with half a brain's opinion. But now they're putting out a tie in like Wales and Scotland and Ireland. There's going to be this UK bid. And suddenly you're losing culture. You're losing a lot of hiss. You're losing a lot of character here. But again, it's just like, it's just stupidity, which is ruining the world right now. So this 2030 bid will probably go through. And it's said to be the only bid from Europe, essentially. So, I mean, no one else is going to have it. But again, like, are Austria ever going to have the World Cup? Of course not. They'll have a tie in Germany and Switzerland. And it's just stupid. Stupid. You know, it's like we all wanted Sepp to go, but now we're looking back.
And you're thinking, wow, Sepp wasn't such a bad dude.
All he was doing was...
it's like I actually sometimes think maybe Jacob Zuma wasn't even the worst thing.
That was my next point. Zuma was incompetent, but at least he just stole with his friends. He wasn't looking to do stupid things like land reform and all that kind of bollocks without compensation. It's like Sepp just stole for him and his mates and basically fleeced third world countries. It's not the biggest deal, is it really? Okay, it is. Of course it is. But I mean, you get my point. It's like this: the next wave of stupidity has a far-reaching effect, which is just ruining things. The Sharks have said that Charlotte Dupree is not for sale. You can't have him. John Mitchell, blah, blah, blah. He's signed a new contract. So that kind of puts the end of that story. And, well, cricket yesterday. The England versus India test. Bloody good. Very exciting. India managed to get 9 wickets. Joe Root was going very well. Virat Kohli then ran him out. And Kohli being Kohli obviously over-celebrated this whole thing. And there's going to be heat because he dropped the ball as in like a drop mic kind of thing. And there's going to be heat. So England basically went full protest after that. They lost a whole bunch of wickets. They're currently, I think, 286 for 9. That's where they'll resume. And Ashwin, the only spinner in the team, and he took 4 wickets in the first day, not from a lot of spin, more of a change of pace kind of aspect. But remember, like I told you last week, with all the dry, hot weather in England, these pitchers aren't going to quite be as receptive to the seamers, and maybe someone like Ashwin is going to do really well. He got 4 wickets first time out, so maybe that theory is going to hold true. That'll take place again today from about 12 o'clock South African time. The Proteas hammered Sri Lanka again in the ODA match. It's great that they're doing this. So that's 2-0 up, the 5-match series. And today starts the WGC Bridgestone in Akron, Ohio. Now, Tiger Woods is playing. He just made it by the skin of his teeth into this field. It's the best field in the world, basically. Like all WGC events, you've got to be the top 50 in the world to get into it. Tiger, in this tournament, at this golf course, has made over $10 million over the years.
Wow.
Just in one event. You break it down, every time Tiger's hit a shot at this golf course, he's essentially made over $3,000. If you go back to the stretch, the 11-year stretch, this is what Tiger's record is at this golf course. Win, win, win. Fourth place, second place. Win, 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 win. It's the last time this tournament we played at this golf course. So if you're looking for fate, destiny, all that kind of stuff, of a Tiger to finally get a win, well, it could be this one. Could be this one. But all the best golfers in the world are playing at this tournament. So look out for the WGC Bridgestone. And next week it is the PGA Championship, the fourth and final major of the year. How bloody exciting.
Cool. All right, Ben, that's a look at the sport. Let's turn our attention to Sia. And Sia's going to inspire us and make us feel happy this morning. Sia, no pressure.
No pressure at all. But this story, even when I found out about it, was so good. It's almost unbelievable. Because what are the chances? So we always hear about teachers who do good. Mm-hmm. And I have never heard of one person going as far as this teacher, Donna Hoagland, who's a teacher in an elementary school in Florida in the US, who has done something for a student, really, that will never forget her. So this is from CBS News. Excuse me. There we go. It all started when Donna, the teacher...
Is that you, Sia?
No, I'm okay, thank you. It all started when Donna, the teacher, noticed this change in one of her fourth grade students. His name is Troy. And the teacher started noticing that the student wasn't the same in class. So she just innocently asked, you know, what's going on? Are you all right? And the student was a bit shy and hesitant to really admit what is going on. So she contacted the student's mother. Mm-hmm. And the mother, whose name is Anhita, then actually divulged that, you know, things are kind of tough because I'm actually in stage 5 kidney failure. So I'm not able to look after our kids the same way. And it's sort of affected our relationship. My goodness, I do not know if we could all do this, but quite innocently, Donna started researching kidney failure and what goes into that and how matches happen and what blood type you have to be. And through this research, she just also signed up on a list saying, you know, if there's ever someone I can match up with, then I'll be able to donate. And what are the chances? The teacher, Donna, was actually an exact match with the mother, Anhita, and she was able to donate. Y'all, I do not know if I could do this. Shucks. But the teacher was able to do this. So the transplant happened back in December last year, and both the teacher and the mother are doing well. And shucks, what a good person. Yeah, it's not me. I don't know if I'd be able to do such, but yeah, that's your say by Sia for this morning.
Beautiful. You know, people who give up a kidney. Wow. It's just amazing. That's such a... Imagine giving up a part of your body to help someone else. Those are good people.
Yeah, a lot of people have difficulties giving up like a cigarette or a piece of gum.
Exactly. You ask some people for like R5 and they look at you askance. Let alone a kidney. Lerato Shabalala is back with a brand new episode. Yes, on this episode of Living It Up with Lerato, which is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters, she chats to the owner of Andrew McKenzie Interiors. So look, this is a specialist podcast for people who are interested in those aspects of lifestyle which allow you to live beautifully, live elegantly. With a background in theater and opera, Andrew talks about lighting and the trends in lighting for 2018, as well as decorating for quaint spaces. Download the podcast on cliffcentral.com. Make sure you get to new episodes every Thursday and explore interior design, making the best use of the space you have, and how to make your room more intimate. decor for kids, and so much more. If you're a parent, you do not want to miss this week's show. So that's Living It Up with Lerato Shabalala. It's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. Are your windows and doorways crying out for some much-needed attention? I'll bet you they are. Well, Taylor Blinds and Shutters are the stylish solution to give them a breath of fresh air. Trusted, innovative, quality, and style. Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All right, let's go to KF Malindi, who's on the line. Is he on Skype or on the phone? The phone. Hey, KF, how are you, dude?
Fine, thanks. You, Gareth. How are you doing?
Good. I'm glad we could talk to you. I heard that you had to first make sure that there were no security people around before you could chat to us.
Definitely. It's still a very tense situation. I don't think anyone is really willing to discuss the happenings of yesterday.
So, KF, let me understand, because we spoke to you the day after the election, and it was still unclear. Mm-hmm. It was unclear what the result was. We heard a whole lot of MDC supporters were out in the streets celebrating, but we found out subsequently that that was before they knew anything about the results.
Well, Gab, this all stems back to 2008, where the presidential election results only came out after about a month, which led both Zimbabweans and the international community to think, obviously, that the election had been rigged.
Yeah.
In 2013, we passed a new constitution, which now states that election results have to be released by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission within 5 days.
Okay.
Which means that by Saturday, all results should have been announced by ZEC. Unfortunately, due to the incitement and machinations of the opposition, people went on the streets yesterday because they felt that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission was taking too much time in releasing results.
Mm-hmm.
If that belief did exist, considering it had only been 2 days, I think it should have been done constitutionally.
Right.
So the complaint should have been constitutional, and it shouldn't have been people going out on the streets. It definitely wasn't spontaneous. It wasn't just like a little scuffle that erupted out of nowhere. No. It was definitely planned. These people were definitely incited.
Hmm. So what does this mean?
And put in harm's way, unfortunately.
What does this mean, though, for ordinary Zimbabweans? Because they're all confused at the moment. They're not sure what's happening. They went to the polls, unprecedented numbers at the election polls. They voted. Mm-hmm. They might have voted for or against the ZANU-PF rule, the current incumbent
exactly.
administration. But now they have no idea of what's going on. So what can you say for sure about when the results will come out and when people will have some certainty?
I was actually speaking to some people a couple of minutes ago and saying that, unfortunately, what the people of Zimbabwe can only expect now is a failure from both sides of the political divide.
No.
Both political parties have failed to bring about a new dispensation. Why? Because the military did definitely, security forces did definitely use excessive force in controlling the riots.
What does that mean? Did they beat people and were there deaths?
Yes, there have been 5 fatalities confirmed.
Oh, my God.
5 confirmed dead, and that the military was deployed with live ammunition.
Oh, my God.
So that is definitely a major failure by the security forces. And at the same time, for the opposition to incite and bring about machinations that an election has been rigged even before full results have been announced is also a failure to the people, and especially trying to bring the people into the streets where they definitely know that was under some sort of military rule.
That's frightening. So for the politicians, this isn't the vacuum that has been created, that this uncertainty has provided them with opportunity.
The hope that Zimbabweans had that they're going to be moving into a new, sort of regime or a new dispensation, as it's been called over and over again, is slowly fading away, and not just from the incumbents, not just from ZANU-PF, but unfortunately right now from MDC as well.
Good heavens.
I think what Zimbabwe needs to do is do exactly what they did in November and just take the power back into their own hands and also just be logical people. For us to be incited by politicians who we know do not have our best interests at heart is pretty much dumb.
Yeah, but how do they even do that, KF? I mean, there's no organizing principle. The parties themselves seem to be in somewhat of a mess and certainly some kind of disarray. Who are the people who will be able to corral everybody into some collective movement here? Who's going to make this happen? Are there leaders? Are there community leaders? Are there religious leaders? Are there people in society who can make things happen?
unfortunately, we don't have any. I'm sure you remember Pastor Evan.
Yes.
He did a very good job back in the day, but unfortunately, he ran for office and lost. Wow. So he's become a politician as well. But definitely, yes, we do need some sort of community movement that even after elections will be like, not what we signed up for, and as a people, this is not what we want. The march that occurred in November that led to the resignation of Robert Mugabe, it's that type of action that we need in the country from the people, not incited by any politicians, but coming from community leaders and the ordinary person on the streets. Because definitely, Gareth, the politicians are taking us for granted. But for me to actually give you a concrete resolution, I'm baffled because regardless of, remember when we spoke the other day, I said that regardless of who wins this election, the biggest thing that has come out of it is that Zimbabweans have become politically astute. We follow politics. We're engaging in politics. We're speaking about politics. People are no longer afraid. People are voting. People are registering to vote. I think that is the most important thing that came out of it. But if this then results in us losing both political sides, it will be very devastating to the hopes and aspirations of Zimbabwe.
So what you're telling me is that this is a disaster. This is not a great outcome, and we're probably going to end up worse off in Zimbabwe than we were before the elections.
I don't want to be a pessimist, Gareth, but I mean, even the statements that were released by both political parties after what happened last night, ZANU-PF said that they blame MDC Alliance and that someone is going to be accountable. MDC Alliance says, well, we didn't send these guys. So no one is taking responsibility. No one is being accountable. No one has even, you know, taken time to, you know, to give condolences to the families of the bereaved. That in itself shows the lack of remorse and lack of a will to actually guide your people into a new dispensation. So, yeah, I'm going to be a pessimist and say, as of now, I'm going to give them until Saturday to you know, release some sort of statements to tell us what's going on and where we're headed as a nation. But right now, after what happened yesterday, I do not see our politicians having our best aspirations at heart.
Jesus. All right. Well, thanks. You brought a little realistic, something of a realistic approach to the whole thing. I was confused as all hell. I still am, yeah. To be perfectly honest. I hope things work out in Zimbabwe. But as you say, the facts on the ground make it very difficult for you to be anything but pessimistic this morning. I'm sorry to hear that.
Let me just close this off by saying this, guys. From a very political view, if you're going to study it, you know, looking at previous occurrences in Zimbabwe, wherever there's an election and violence then does occur, because there was no violence pre-election and post-election until yesterday.
Yes.
But now that there has been, and with the EU, AU, and SADC around, the last time this happened, Thabo Mbeki intervened, and we ended up forming a government of national unity.
Are you guys hoping for some kind of international intervention on that level from the AU, South Africa?
We don't need an international intervention at this point in time, but I think the MDC does.
Wow. All
Because clearly ZANU-PF has won the presidential election. I'm just going to say that out of, you know, V23 forms that has been released. Mm-hmm. And for the MDC to gain some sort of leverage, if there is violence that occurs and some need to revise the election, it might end up in a government of national unity and work to the benefit of the MDC alliance, which is why we still think that they insinuated the demonstrations that occurred yesterday.
All right. Thanks, man. Jesus. Not a very happy outcome. All right. Thanks very much, KF. People had such high hopes for the Zimbabwean election, and it seems like it's just falling to pieces. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on it because this is our immediate northern neighbor, and it's been a country that's been a focus of South Africa's attention for such a long time, and our foreign relations directives with regard to Zimbabwe have been a preoccupation of many people on both sides of that border. And I think we've got to, you know, accept that we're also a country in which many Zimbabweans have come to find sanctuary and opportunity. And it's highly unlikely with the kind of instability that we see immediately post this election that those Zimbabweans are going to want to contribute back to Zimbabwe when they've got something going on here, even if it's a little spaza shop or a street vending stall or something even smaller. I can't imagine it would be a good idea for them to rush headlong back into that. Justice Malala, what do you say?
I say, we had this conversation last Thursday. Ben, Sia and I, we went through what is going to go wrong in Zimbabwe. And there, it's happened. You know what?
So you're like the Nostradamus.
There it is.
You know, we spoke about it. The problem with Zimbabwe right now, the conversation is about Nelson Chamisa, Emmerson Mnangagwa. It's about all these leaders and so forth. It's not about the fact that even before you went into this election, quite frankly, it's outrageous. Did you see all those election observers standing up saying, oh, it was relatively free and fair and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
If you are Nelson Chamisa, Tendai Biti, all these guys in the opposition, there was no way you were going to get any kind of coverage on ZBC, which is where all those rural voters, 3 million of them, 3 million plus of them come from. You are not going to be featured in the Herald or any of the government newspapers.
So it was a show.
It was a show. It was rigged before we even got there. Then there was all the talk about the participation of the army. The ZEC, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which now says, oh, I'll announce on this day, oh, wait for me here and so forth. We spoke about it last week. We said, they've changed the rules that now as you vote, the police are standing there watching you. Isn't that going to intimidate you? This is 2018, guys. 2018. And you think ZANU-PF gets a 2/3 majority in parliament? Huh? 2/3 majority.
After 20 years of economic failure. Doesn't sound right.
Your relative, you are going in to vote, you are Gogo Mutambara or you are Gogo Sithole in Bulawayo. You're going to vote. 4 of your children are living in South Africa. 2 are in the US or the UK or somewhere else. Everyone's left and you still vote for the, it doesn't make sense. ZANU-PF has no chance of winning unless something has gone down. And I think one of the problems with the discussion right now is that, you know, from 3 p.m. onwards yesterday, we've had this huge focus on the violence, on the fact that people have been shot and killed, on the role of the army, the decision by Mnangagwa to trigger this riotous assemblies act type legislation and so forth and so forth. It's not even, you know, it's horrible when people die, and I don't know what the latest numbers are.
Six people,
now. Okay. You know, at some point last night, I saw even 7, and I'm sure that, you know, that number will likely go up. But there is a reason why that has happened. And it starts right with those institutions. The media is not free. You know, you don't get featured at all. Imagine that you're Julius Malema or you're Musi Maimane and you don't get featured on the SABC. You have a whole
slew of people who've never ever got access to other media.
Absolutely. Yeah. Zero. It's almost like they don't exist. They don't exist.
All right. Hold that thought. The episode of The Burning Platform with Justice Malala coming up in a moment. You know, so many things to talk about, and Justice is—he's going to make some announcements too. He's taking off, and that's not just his cough. He's lining up some interesting things. He has begun his ascent, which we'll talk about in a minute. Justice Malala, here's your special song for this Thursday morning, Cardi B.
This is CliffCentral.com.